We've spent a lot of time in this parak. Back to parak Yud Chet is where we still are.
This is last week's paper for 2000.
Yeah, this is if anybody still needs it. I'm not sure we'll get to it, but if there's anything left on it, just in case. All right. We spent a great deal of time talking about the relationships between that are described in this parak. And that's really what this parak does. It sets out for us... It sort of sets out all the different dynamics. It introduces the key players. It introduces the dynamics, the relationship between Shaul and David, between David and Shaul, David and the rest of Bnei Israel. Today we are going to begin to look at the relationship between David and his wife slash wives. Okay, that's sort of a subtext of the parak. But I want to first finish the piece about Shaul, because I think we left off a couple of pieces unfinished. So we are up to Pasuk. We're up to Pasuk Yud Zayin. I'm going to start one Pasuk earlier. Two Pasukim earlier. Tedvav, Vayhi David Lechol Drachav, Maskil Vahashem Imo. Everything that David did was successful. Maskil, God was with him. The phrase maskil is actually an interesting phrase. It means to be successful, but when you put it together with David,
where are you? I'm
sorry. What parak are we
in? I am in Parak Yud Chet, Pasuk Tetvav.
Oh, I thought you said Yud Zayin.
Right. So, just the phrase "V'chol asher v'hi David l'chol drachav maskil v'Hashem imo," everything David did, he was successful. God was with him. The term David and a maskil should ring familiar to us. You put those two terms together, you get a very interesting combination. Why? Anybody have an inkling as to where I'm going?
No.
Maskil, in a different context and in a somewhat different meaning, maskil is one of the terms used to describe an introduction to Sefer to a parak of Tehillim. Each chapter in Tehillim begins differently, and some of them begin Lam Natzeach, some of them begin with the word Mizmor. There's a host of them that begin with the word maskil, and many of them are Maskil David. Maskil Leitan Ezrachi, Maskil LaAsaf, but then you have Maskil LeDavid. So there's a, just sort of flipping through and finding a bunch of them. You can do it on your own time. If you just flip through Tehillim, you'll see the opening paragraph, opening phrase of each paragraph of Tehillim begins with a kind of an introductory statement that sets the tone. Lam Natseach, Mizmor, Livne Korach, LeDavid, and then some of them are Maskil LeDavid. Put that together with David, and here is the first reference to a combination between the notion of David and Laskil, which is to succeed. God was with him. Vayar Shaul Shaul Maskil Ma'od. Shaul noticed that the more he was trying to threaten David, the more he was trying to harm him, the more successful he would become. Vayagor Mipanav. Became frightened of him. Vayagor is a much more intense type of fear. We talked about this. Vayagor Moav Mipnei Ha'am Ma'od Kiravu. It's a fear of for your life almost. V'cho Yisrael V'yuda Ohev Et David Kehu Yotzei Lifnehem Uveva Lifnehem. We talked last week about the contrast. The more Shaul tried to challenge David, tried to see David as a threat to him, the more he was fearful and antagonistic to David, the greater the relationship was building between David and those around him. So the contrast here between Shaul on the one hand and Yisrael and Yehuda on the other, we'll see this contrast a few times in this parak. Vayomer Shaul el David. Hine biti agdola merav, ota eten lecha leisha, acheili livenechail milachem milchamot Hashem. Shaul Amar, Al Tihi Yadi Bo, Utihi Bo, Yad Plishtim. So here's the second attempt by Shaul. He tried first to kill him directly, unsuccessfully, subtly. And his second attempt is to use the promise that he gave him to marry his daughter. Remember that David has promised to marry the daughter of Shaul from the Battle of Goliath. So Shaul now has a new idea. He'll offer David to that he'll fulfill that promise to David. He'll give him Merav. But he'll make the condition so that he has to fight the wars, even though really this condition is superfluous.
He was already doing it, wasn't
he? Number one, he was already doing it. Number two, he was already promised his daughter. So why stipulate a new condition to marry the king's daughter if you're not beginning to kind of back off of that promise? Oh yeah, I promised you my daughter, but you first have to prove yourself. What was Goliath all about? No, not enough. You have to prove yourself even more. And what were all these other battles that I was sent in? No, you have to prove yourself even more. You have to fight Muhammad Hashem. You have to fight the real battles. I wasn't doing that up until now. No, now it's even more significant. Shaul Amar Alti Yadibo Utibo Yad Plishtim. This was his attempt to force David into the front lines of the battle, hoping that the Plishtim will kill him. Interesting observation. They're still battling the Plishtim. They will continue to battle the Plishtim for years. The Plishtim are the main threat at this point in the life of Shaul and David, although later there'll be other enemies surrounding more sort of larger nations, armies that they'll have to fight. But the battle with the Plishtim is a unique one because it's not a typical enemy. It's not an external enemy. It's an internal enemy. It's a battle for the land. The Plishtim are in Eretz Plishtim, which is south of the land of Israel. They're sort of, use your imagination, it's a different kind of challenge. All right, Pasuk Yud-Chet. Vayomer David o Shaul, mi anochi? So David's response is interesting. What has he essentially said?
You're not good enough.
I'm not good enough. Who am I? Who is my family? That I should be the son-in-law of the king?
Does he mean it?
That is an interesting question. Does he mean it? What is it that tells you that he's not? That he doesn't mean it?
I don't know. To me, the way it was said, it conjures up in my mind, you know, I'm going to say this, but I really don't mean it.
In and of itself, and as its own standalone verse, I'm not sure I could make that assertion. The phrase, mi anochi, is a phrase
the other stuff from beforehand.
Well, that might be. In other words, in a context, I could hear that. By and of itself, the verse sounds very similar to other verses we have seen of people given opportunity for great moments and who have shied away from it out of humility. For example, Moshe at the burning bush, God says to him, go to Paro, take my people out of Egypt, and his initial first words out of his mouth is, mi anochi ki elech el Paro? Who am I that I should go to Paro? Gideon, mi anochi? Who am I that Mishpachat Avi b'Yisrael? Who am I that I should go and fight against Midian? Mi anochi? Mi chayai? Now, in this case, Dean, I think you are correct. There's something uncomfortable about this statement. Partially because of what we saw in Perek Yud Zayin, where he's looking for what the reward for the Battle of Goliath is, and partially because of what we haven't yet read, or we read initially but haven't yet seen in this Perek in depth, which is his response to the offer of Michal. His response to the offer of Michal, after he's kind of softened up a bit, is to say, okay, oh, that's fine, but I don't have a dowry. I don't have any money. In other words, he's coming at this from the perspective of he really isn't worthy of the king's daughter because
he doesn't
have the stature. Not because he doesn't want it. And that's the difference. Not because he doesn't really want it, but he feels he doesn't have the stature. Either the familial stature, the nobility, the royal blood, or the financial ability. But either way, his initial response is to refuse. Do you know, Jackie, what were you going to say?
Well, what bothered me more is Mi Anochi is fine, but when he talks about his family, then, I don't know. You know,
that's not uncommon.
Okay.
If you look at Gidon as an example, that's a kind of a biblical language of humility that I think is just we wouldn't necessarily resonate with it today. But if you look at Gidon for a moment, if you look at Gidon in Perak, Shoftim Perak Vav. Language here is a little bit different. He doesn't have the phrase Mi Anochi in this Perak, but he comes to the same sentiment. If you look at Perak Vav, Shoftim Perak Vav, Pasuk Tet Vav. It's the middle of a conversation. Gidon's first encounter with a malach is to have a cold conversation with him. How can I go? What do I have to save Israel with? Vayomer elav bi Hashem. Do you see it?
Yes.
Perek vav pasuk tet vav. Vayomer elav bi Hashem. Bama oshia et Yisrael. How am I going to save Israel? Hine al pi hadal bamnasha. My family, my tribe, my aluf. Is the poorest of all the families of Menasheh. I'm the youngest in my father's house. So again, in that expression of humility, similar to that of Moshe, and actually the God's answer to him in that moment is exactly the same answer God gave to Moshe. But the phraseology there is very similar to what David here records. Who am I and who is my family? Not only is my household, my family, the most inconsequential, but I'm the youngest in my family. It's sort of that combination of who am I and who is my household, who is my family, that you see by Gidon, you see it here. By David, not quite the same phrase.
Adal bamnasheh,
the most impoverished, meaning the least consequential. Dal means poor. Comes to the same message, right? Who am I, and who is my family? There, you could argue that David's family was famous. You could argue that David's family, in fact, should be royal blood. It's a direct descendant of Boaz and a direct descendant of Yehuda and of Chetzon, right? There's a royalty that runs through his blood, or at least a promise of royalty, and that's the difference. You don't have royalty in the household of Yehudah till David. So we have his perception that Shevet Yehudah and the household of Machut Beit David, right? But that's really post David, not pre. Maybe Boaz was a shofet. And that was but that in itself isn't necessarily a lineage that would promise kingship. So,
what's the difference if he's the youngest? Why is that? I mean, that can't be that important.
In the biblical arena, it is the bechor, the oldest, the first, the heir to the throne. You're talking about royalty. You're talking about marrying the king. In the world of kings and the dynamic of royal households. The oldest is usually the most significant, certainly in the world of the one most responsible. And he's the youngest, right? Both Gidon and David have the distinction of being the youngest in their families. In Chumash, that's not a negative. Right? In Chumash, it's a whole dynamic in Sefer Bereishit, where the Bechor never gets his birthright. When you go through the dynamic of Sefer Bereishit, from the beginning to the end, you'll find that every Bechor gets dismissed at some point or another from the beginning of time. Cain and Hevel, maybe, you can even go back that far, but certainly B'nai Avraham, if you look at the relationship between Yitzchak and Yishmael, Yishmael is the Bechor, Yitzchak is not. If you look at Yaakov and Esav, Esav is the Bechor, Yaakov is not. If you look at the sons of Yaakov, Ephraim and Menashe, Reuven is the Bechor, he doesn't get the Bechorah. If you look at the sons of Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe, Menashe is the Bechor, he gets shifted away because of Ephraim. Sefer Bereishit is a very clear message, which is that the Bechor never gets the Bechorah because it's by what you earn and not by what you are born into. But that's about leadership. The Torah limits the role of the Bechor to the Pishnaim, to the rule of the double portion, because the Bechor typically was responsible for the family finances and looking after the parents. So that's why the Torah allocates a double portion to the Bechor on a financial basis. But in terms of leadership, in the context of Sefer Bereishit, the Bechor role is actually attacked again and again as not the one who ends up in the leadership role. But in the domain of kings and in the world of hierarchy, dynasties of kings, who's the heir to the throne? Who's the first in line to the throne always?
The Bechor,
the king, right? They're the firstborn. Or the firstborn, I should qualify that. The firstborn from the primary wife. That's a major piece in Sefer Shmuel. We'll see with David, is the firstborn has to be of the wife designated as the primary wife to be the mother of the king. You can have, a king can have multiple wives, not necessarily all for the purpose of giving birth to the heir to the throne. Only one is designated as the primary wife for that purpose, which will help us understand a little bit of the dynamic amongst David's children. But that's a much later story. Okay.
Who picks the designated wife?
The king.
The king does that.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing?
No. No, that's the king's choice. All right.
It would be an interesting thesis for somebody to do about the Bechor of Bereishit.
It's been done. It's been written about. Many, many.
Nice PhD thesis.
Not sure if it reaches the level of a PhD thesis, but it has been written about. All right. Be that as it may, back to our story. So David refuses, turns down Shaul's offer. Now, think about it for a moment. If we want to trace the process, how many people have been offered greatness and have refused by this expression of humility? Moshe, Gidon, Shaul. Same message, right? In each one of those instances, the immediate response of whoever they were talking to was to say to them,
You can do it.
I'll be with you. Don't worry. God is with you. Whatever the designation is. Shaul's response to David's refusal was, "Vehi be'et tet et mirav bat Shaul l'David, v'hi nitna Adriel amocholati l'isha." The time when it came to mirav to be given to Shaul, he gave her to somebody else. Adriela Mocholati Lisha. Meaning Shaul's response to this was,
"Okay, we'll give her somebody else.
I accept your resignation. I have it on my desk in the morning. Thank you very much."
And I'm
David, you will not get an argument from me. Who am I that I should be the king? You're right. You're a nobody. Goodbye. I don't want you. I don't really want you. I never really wanted to give you in the first, my daughter in the first place. I'm happy for you to go home. Leave me. Well, he doesn't want him to go home because he needs him, but he certainly does not want him to be his son-in-law. And Shaul is only too happy to jump in and say, thank you very much. I accept your resignation. And that stands out in the background of the other, the pattern that we've seen in all of these instances. But the story's not over. Because suddenly we find a new dynamic. Vate'ahav Michal bat Shaul et David. Michal loved David. Who is Michal?
Another daughter.
The younger daughter. How do I know she's the younger daughter?
Because Mirab
was the oldest. Because Mirab is the oldest. Right? Because it says, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Hinei Biti Hagdola Mirab. So we see that Mirab is the oldest. That makes Michal younger. It doesn't necessarily make her the youngest. We don't know how many children he has, but we don't know of other daughters at this point. There, Mirav is the oldest, so Michal therefore is the younger. We'll come back to that issue a little bit later. Vate'ahav Michal bat Shaul et David. Michal loved Shaul. Loved David. Now, it doesn't tell us why Michal loved Shaul. There are two individuals in this. Okay, I do. Listen,
okay.
That's Shaul, Shmuel, David, right? They all get mixed up in the flow of conversation. Why Michal loved David, we don't necessarily know.
He sang and he was
good looking. He was successful, he was good looking, he was young. He was dynamic, he was a musician, he was very talented. Yonatan certainly, right, we've already seen the relationship between Yonatan and David as one, right? Shaul's children are very taken by David. Not so much Shaul, but his children certainly are, and that's part of the contrast between that this parak sets out between how Shaul's relationship with David is so negative compared to everybody around Shaul. But she loves David. Vayagidu l'Shaul. Now, if you were Shaul, what would you do? You just offered Mirav to David, and David refused, and Mirav, he married off to somebody else. Then they come knocking on your door and you say, you know what? Michal has fallen in love with David. So what's your initial response?
Initially, I'm not interested.
I'm not interested? Or, now I got to deal with a new parasha. Now I thought I got rid of him, and now he's back in my kishkas. Right? I can't get rid of him so easily. But Shaul had a different cheshbon. Vayishara devar be'inav. It was very nice. He approved. Why did he approve?
Found another way to get rid of him.
Exactly right. Because now he found another way to get rid of him. Only this time, he has two agendas up his sleeve. Vayomer Shaul, etnenu lo, I will give her to him. Utihi lo lemokesh. Utihi voyad plishtim. Let her be a stumbling block to him. And let the plishtim take him down. Now, that the plishtim should take him down is not a new idea. Right? Because again, he's going to make a criteria for David that David will find himself in the front lines again with the plishtim. Right? Tested again, if you will, with Goliath, but this time Goliath times 100. Whereas, Tehillu Lemokesh, that's a phrase we haven't seen yet. So what we're going to look at time remaining for us today is two phrases in Shaul's response. The first being Tehillu Lemokesh, what is this stumbling block that he's referring to? And the second is what he says next. Vayomer Shaul el David, Bishtayim titchaten bi hayom. To marry into my family, Bishtayim titchaten bi hayom. With two, I'll translate it, but it's hard to translate it because the translation here is the crux of the issue. With shtayim, you shall marry into my household today. Now, David refused Merab. So what makes Shaul think that David is going to acquiesce to Michal any more than he would to Merab? Right? Why is David more likely to accept the offer of Michal than he was to accept the offer of Merab? I don't think the sincerity of Shaul is any different in either case.
I was going to say the same thing.
It's
so would be so obvious, right?
I'm going to hold that thought. I want to hold that thought until next week. I don't think we're going to get to it today, but I want you to come back to that thought.
Dina,
I want you to thought think answer the question: did David like Michal better than Merab? Okay, think about that observation. It sounds obvious.
Yeah. Well, maybe the fact that she loved him was more.
Certainly more attractive to marry somebody who loves you than to marry somebody who doesn't. I would agree with that.
But you don't really know where Merab stood.
No, we don't know anything about Merab.
You don't really know that.
No.
Maybe she liked him too.
Maybe. We have no way of knowing. But we do know that David wasn't so quick to acquiesce. So whereas we would have think that... this time Michal loved him, etc., that David would agree. Not so fast. Shaul was a little smarter this time around. And he knew that David wasn't going to agree so quickly. After all, he had already established the fact that he felt unworthy. So Shaul has to get past, to be able to put this plan into play, he's got to get past David's feeling of unworthiness. And so he will. Vayitzav Shaul el et avadav. He turns to his servants, who aren't necessarily in on his plot. Remember, he has told nobody that his desire is to kill him. So he turns to his avadim and he says, "Dabru al David balat lemor. Go speak to David quietly, discreetly. Go convince him and say to him, Hinei chafetz b'cha amelech v'chol avadav ahivucha. The king wants you to be his son-in-law. His servants love you. Yata, hitchaten b'melech. Marry into the king's family. What are you refusing for? He desires you. He wants you. He was willing to give you his daughter. So, you know, it didn't work out with Merab, but Michal loves you. What are you so hesitant for? Go convince him. Clearly David needs convincing. Vaydabru avdei Shaul baznei David et advarim eile. So they do. Avdei David, they go and they speak these words. Vayomer David. So David has a new answer. Hanekalab enechem mitchaten b'melech. You think it's so easy to marry into the king's family? Anochi ish rash v'nikle. I am a poor man. I have nothing. There's a fundamental difference between this response of David and his first response, which is...
Well, he makes himself out to be almost like a nobody.
In the first case he did, right? Mi anochi ki yeh chatan lamelach.
Now he's saying he's poor.
Right. And what's the difference?
He doesn't want to be married to the king's daughter. He didn't say that the first time.
Well,
he doesn't say that at all.
He might be worthy. He doesn't have money.
Right. He can be worthy, but not have the means.
Yeah.
It's a fundamental difference. To say, I am not, who am I and who is my family, means that I don't have the blood or the stature to marry into the king's family. And therefore, there's nothing you can do to change that. Whereas if the issue is money, you know the old expression, may all your problems be money and may those be solvable. Right? If the issue is money, money's a solvable problem. So already in the response of David, you hear a different tenor than in his first response. His first response is, I'm a nobody. I'm not a royal family. I don't deserve it. By the time he comes to him the second time with the offer of Michal, and the servants come and they kind of soften him up and they talk to him a lot, quietly, by this point in time, his response is different. It's, you no longer hear the tenor of, and the voice of Mi Anochi. Now it's Anochi Ish Rash V'Nikla. I don't have the money, I don't have the dowry, I don't have the means or the resources to buy into the king's family.
Is this a common social theme also?
I would assume it is. Otherwise it wouldn't have resonated.
Right.
Clearly it resonated, I would assume it is. But in this case, it's a... Shaul, in a sense, sees it as, oh, I've got him. Shaul, to Shaul, he plays right into Shaul's hands. Now I've got him. Because he has the perfect answer for him. Ve'yagidu avdei Shaul lemor, kadverim eile diver David, the avdei Shaul come back to Shaul and say, report what David had said. Ve'yomer Shaul, kotamu David, ein chefetz lamelech b'mohar, ki b'me'a orlot plishtim. I don't need money. You bring me 100 orlot plishtim, and I will take that as your dowry. Now, of course, Shaul has an agenda. For the third time, we are told, Shaul chashav lapil et David biyad plishtim. Who is going to, in their right mind, agree to such a condition? To go bring 100 orlot plishtim? And if he does agree to it, the likelihood is he's not going to survive it. Before we get to David's response, I want to go back to the phrase, to the two phrases in the previous pasuk that were that I said were a challenge. Come back to pasuk Chaf Aleph. There are two phrases in this pasuk that we need to understand. The first is the phrase Bishtaim Hitraten Biayom. Just translate for a moment. Bishtayim titchaten biayom. With two, you will marry me, meaning marry into my family today. What does the word bishtayim here refer to?
Second time around, I'm trying.
Oh, so that's exactly one possibility, and that's actually on the source page that you have. The Targum talks about something similar. Ve'amar Shaul David b'chada mitrein. See, the problem with the word b'shtayim is that what is he saying? He's offering him two wives. That doesn't make sense. But with two, you're going to marry me today. That doesn't make any sense. What do you mean two? So, one possibility is the phrase with two, meaning second, with one of two.
With the second daughter.
With the second daughter. Meaning, didn't work with the first. So, I have two daughters. So, with one of them, you'll marry. If it's not Mirav, it'll be Michal. Bechat men. This is the very last two sources on this page. This was a page from a previous piece, but it's sources 6 and 7. The Targum translates, V'yamar Shaul David b'chada mintrein, with one of two. Adding the word b'chada, right? You'll marry one of the two daughters, right? Didn't work the first time, we'll do it at the second time, one of the two. Rashi adds a little bit of depth to that interpretation. Ki b'shtei banot yeshli, I have two daughters. B'achat mehem titchaten bi, one of them you'll marry. Didn't work with Michal, so let's try with Michal. And we have a similar phrase in the end of Sefer Shmuel, where the pasuk says, "By remember the story where David counted Bnei Yisrael in a census. He wasn't supposed to take, and God gets angry at him." And God says to him, Shalosh Anochi Notel Alecha. I'm giving you three. Meaning, Achat Mishalosh, one of three punishments, you choose. Bachar Lecha Achat Mehem, you choose one of them. But the phrase doesn't say, Achat Mishalosh, I'll give you one of three. The phrase says, Shalosh Ani Notel Alecha, as if to say, I'm giving you three punishments, you choose one of them. I'm giving you the option of three, so you have a similar idea. Bishtayim, meaning the option of one of two. Mirav was not an option. Okay, so we'll look at Michal. That's one possibility. The second possibility is, as Adina said, this, the word b'shtayim could be translated as b'sheni, meaning the second. B'shniya. B'shniya titchatem b'yayo. The second. The other possibility, or the third possibility, is that two could refer to not the daughters, but the conditions. I'll let you marry my daughter on two conditions. One, you've already fulfilled, which was?
Killing Goliath.
Goliath. In other words, I promised whoever killed Goliath my daughter's hand in marriage. Comes along Shaul to David and says to him, okay, David, you know what, let's clarify this. I'm willing to let you marry my daughter, but it wasn't with one battle, but rather, Mishtai. So you need to go back and fight the Plishtim. So already in his head, he's got this plan that he's going to let the Plishtim kill him, and that's what he says. B'shtayim titchatem b'ayom, you need a second battle.
So it's the king's prerogative to just change his mind, obviously, because he had already made this promise, and therefore he's still allowed to change his mind.
Legitimately or not legitimately, I don't know. There's nobody around to tell him that he's not allowed to do so, so who's going to challenge him on this, right? The only one who possibly could challenge him on it would be Shmuel, and Shmuel's already out of the picture.
So, I suppose so.
I don't think he's...
He doesn't follow any rules.
I don't think he's actually allowed, technically, but it doesn't really matter. And then we get... And he's already tried to kill him. I don't think that's allowed either. You know, look at it from that perspective. Then we come to the second phrase. Utehilu lemokesh. I'm going to give him my daughter's hand in marriage. Utehilo lemokesh. Let her be a stumbling block for him. So what is it about this second marriage or second offer that is a mokesh to David? Why does he assume that if he agrees to this condition, tehilo lemokesh? So one simple explanation is that these two phrases, v'tehilu lemokesh u'tehibo yad plishtim, is the same thing. It's saying the same thing twice. He liked the idea of giving Michal to David because it'll allow him a second opportunity to force him into the front lines of the plishtim. Let her marriage, her status, let the desire to marry him be a stumbling block. Tehilu lemokesh, how? By engaging with the plishtim. And so he says to David, b'shtayim, with a second condition, meaning the war with the plishtim, you may marry my daughter. That's the sort of, that would be an approach to this verse that would look at the entire verse as leading up to this moment of offering David his daughter's hand, knowing that eventually it's going to come down to a dowry and to a mahar, and Shaul, up his sleeve, has this idea of, I'm going to make this condition so impossible that he'll either refuse and walk away from it, or, more importantly, he probably won't walk away from it, but it'll get him killed. Utihi b'yad plishtim. So from the outset, Shaul is focused on putting David into this position of Tihibo Yad Plishtim. There's a second possibility of Tihilu Lemokesh. I'm going to come back to it. I'm doing this out of order, but I'm doing it intentionally because I want to sort of follow one train of thought, which is this war with the Plishtim, and then come back to the second possibility. So after this whole idea, second war, Tehilu Lemokesh, stumbling block, Yibayab Plishtim. What does he finally hit David with? Condition? Go and fight 100 Plishtim in a manner in which you can bring me 100 or lot. We didn't discuss a little, we never discussed, and I'm not going to really make it a subject of great discussion here because it's take us off topic, but why, you'll forgive me, why are lot Plishtim? And then oil is the foreskin, right? Why make the issue of bris milah or circumcision or the foreskins of the plishtim the condition for this? Like, of all the things you're going to bring their heads, I get. Okay, bring me 100 olot. What's the rationale, at least from David's perspective, that he goes out and he does it? What's the rationale? So we just need to understand, in addition to everything else, just a little bit of the culture around circumcision that was prevalent at the time. The Plishtim are identified as a people as Arelim, meaning uncircumcised. When Shimshon first encounters a Philistine woman whom he loves, remember the story of Shimshon back in Sefer Shoftim? And he tells his parents, Ishara iti bebenot plishtim. The initial gut reaction of Shimshon's parents was, anybody remember the phrase?
About being uncircumcised.
Right. The initial gut reaction, I'll give you the pasuk, was, Vayered Shimshon Timnata Vayar Isha Betimnata Mibnot Plishtim. It's Shoftim Perek Yedaled. Vayal Vayaged Laviv Leimo Vayomer Isha Ra'iti Betimnata Mibnot Plishtim. I saw a Philistine woman amongst the Plishtim. Ve'ata Kru Ta Li Isha. I want to marry her. Vayomer Lo Aviv Imo. His father and mother said to him, I'm in Perek. Yishoftim perik yedalei pasuk gimel. Ha'en bevnot achecha uvachol ami isha ki eta olech lakachat isha miplishtim ha'arelim. Amongst all of your brethren, you can't find a suitable wife. You have to go and find a wife amongst the uncircumcised Philistines. So we have to understand that the issue of Brit Milah was a cultural, was intended to be a cultural divide between Bnei Israel and the nations surrounding them. And certainly the notion that that they looked at the Plishtim and identified them as a nation, as sort of the stigma of being uncircumcised. Go back to the story of Shechem in Bereshit with Dina. Right? The stigma of being uncircumcised meant that was a barrier to a cultural integration with this nation, with the nations surrounding them. It just didn't engage with and socialize with the daughters of an uncircumcised nation. And so to go and say to David, go and bring me 100 orlot plishtim, was a way of attacking the plishtim, but at the same time highlighting the cultural divide, that which separates, that which makes Bnei so unique, and the plishtim, their enemy, partially identified through this notion of the bris milah and the orla. Yeah.
Are there any? Is there anything in Tanakh that talks about arelim of other nations that were, you know, that were surrounding?
It was particularly offensive by the plishtim. You have it several times amongst the plishtim. Why? I don't know. My guess is either, remember, they're in closer proximity to the Plishtim than to any other nation.
Mm-hmm.
Plishtim are living in their midst. And so it highlights a necessary division with the Plishtim that you wouldn't necessarily have with other nations, because the other nations are outside our borders, whereas the Plishtim are inside our borders.
Do we have any information about whether maybe those nations, for some of them might have been circumcised?
No, that would be unlikely.
Unlikely that we would know about, or unlikely that they were circumcised?
Unlikely that they were circumcised. The Egyptians certainly were not. It was not a common cultural practice at the time. There's the whole question of what bris milah was in the culture of Israel and why it was done and what it represents. But that's a much broader conversation. And we'll leave that for now. But it highlights here with the plishtim the fact that this test was not arbitrary. Because plishtim are called plishtim ha'arelim. So go bring me 100 olot plishtim. And you place David in a very difficult position. All right. David's not fazed by it. Pasuk Chav Vav. Ve'agidu avadav leDavid et hadvarim eile. Vayishar hadavar be'enei David litchotem b'melech. David thought, oh great, that's my opportunity to marry the king, marry the king's daughter, to enter into the king's household. Vayishar hadavar appears twice in this parak. Did you notice that? In the same story. When Shaul hears that Michal loves David, his initial response was, end of Pasuk Chaf,
Vayishar
hadavar beinav. Now, David hears the condition for such marriage, Vayishar hadavar beinav David.
Everybody's happy, that's good.
Everybody's happy. We're all of everybody else. The only ones who aren't so happy are the plishtim. V'lo yamul malu yamim. Days did not pass. Right, meaning he didn't even wait for the predetermined moment that was Shaul given. Right? A condition of bringing me 100 or lo plishtim is not open ended. It's got to be by a certain date. Because otherwise, over the course of the next 10 years, I'll fight 10 different battles. You'll forgive me. I'll grab an orla here and an orla there. Right? Needs to put him into a position where he's where there's a time stipulated. So says the Radach. Whatever Shaul gave him a time, it's not clear what that time was. A week, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it was. Velo malu yamim. David went out and he did it right away. Didn't have to wait. Vayakom David, vayelechu v'nashav. David has his little band. He goes out. Vayach b'plishtim matayimish. David doubled the offer. Vayavei David et olotehem. Vayimal'um lemelech. Paid them to the king. It's a pun. Lashon nefer lashon on the phrase l'mal'ot, mal'u lemelech, vayimal'um lemelech, and mal'u yamim. The significance of that phrase we'll talk about Bezot Hashem next week. Litchatem b'melech, vayiten lo Shaul et Michal bito l'isha. Here's the 200 orlot plishtim, kesef kedushin, and with them he marries Michal bat Shaul. Vayar Shaul vayeda ki Hashem im David, u'michal bat Shaul ahevatu. At that point, Shaul understood. God was with David. There was nothing he could do about it. And Michal loved him. Which I guess is a way of saying to the father who really doesn't like his son-in-law, but your daughter does, so I guess there's some...
That's what he cared about, his daughter's feelings. I'm a little surprised.
The juxtaposition of these two phrases is quite remarkable, right? V'yayashu'u v'yeda ki Hashem im David u'michal bat shu'la evata. Vayasav Shaul leromi pnei David od, vayhi Shaul oyev et David kol hayamim. Shaul feared David. Shaul hated David. Vayetzu sarei plishtim vayhi midei tzetam sachal David mikol avdei Shaul vayikar shmo mod. When the wars continued with the plishtim, David continued to be sachal, successful. There's that word again, maskil. More than any other of Shaul's servants. So three times this parak has placed before us the relationship between Shaul and David in contrast to everybody else. Now, every time it mentions Shaul's fear of David, it mentions in the same breath how everybody else felt about David. I don't know if you noticed that pattern. But that's the pattern of this parak. And it starts in the beginning of the parak and it goes right through to the end. Take a look at the beginning. Pasuk Bet and Gimel. Same parak. This parak sets out the relationships between David and Shaul constantly in contrast to everybody else. So, for example, Pasuk Bet in Gimel, Vayikachehu Shaul b'yomahu v'lo natno l'shuv b'vet Aviv. At the very beginning of the parak, Shaul takes David brings him into his household, doesn't let him go home because he needs his services, immediately followed by Pasuk Gimel, which is
Vayichvot Yonatan v'David brit b'havato oto b'nefsho.
Vayichvot Yonatan v'David brit b'havato oto k'nefsho. Meaning, as Shaul brought him into his service, Yonatan entered into a brit with him. Contrast the relationship between Shaul and David to the Yonatan and David. At this point, they're both positive, but they're very different. To Shaul, who is David? He's a musician. He's a player, he's a musician, musical player who is necessary because Shaul has these moments of melancholy and he needs somebody to lift his spirits. So therefore, he won't let him go home. To Yonatan, who is Shaul, who is David?
A friend.
He's a friend. Brit. Brit means mutuality. There's a relationship between them. V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, ba'avato okto k'nafsho. That's one piece of it. Then, the second, the middle of this parak, right? That's the beginning of the parak. Then in the middle of the parak, psukim with which we began today, Tedvav and Tedzayin. Vahi David l'chol d'rachav maskil, v'ashem imo. Vayar Shaul ashehu maskil ma'od, v'yago mipanav. After the story with the Chanit, where he tried to kill him and he escaped, he realizes that David has a special providence with him, and it begins to make him fearful. Right away, B'chol Yisrael v'Yuda ohev et David, ki hu yotzef avalifnehem. To the extent that Shaul is fearful, the rest of Yisrael and Yuda are enamored, taken.
It doesn't indicate necessarily that they loved him. They were happy because he was fighting their battles.
The word ohev in Tanakh has a different meaning than it means in modern lexicon. It can mean emotional love like we have by Michal and Yaakov and Leah, Yaakov and Rachel, but more often than not it means choice, desire, relationship. When it says that Yitzchak ahav et Esav and Rivka ahav et Yaakov, it doesn't mean that they loved one child more than the other. It means that each one saw in one of them the one chosen for a particular designation of purpose or role. Et ach Esav li Yaakov, alo Yaakov ahavti et Esav seneti, says Navi Malachi. I loved Yaakov and two brothers, Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov I loved, Esav I hated. Love and hate in that regard is choice, not necessarily an emotional designation. Or you have it by the story of the firstborn, in Parsha Kitetze. Kiela ishnena shtenashim. Person has two wives. It's a very powerful phrase because you see it there. Ki tiyena le'ish shtei nashim. Man has two wives. Ha'achat ahuva v'ha'achat snu'a. Why does he have two wives? One loved, one hated. Why does he have two wives then? We have an option. Right? Love one, hate the other, and get rid of her. Right? We have an option. What do you mean ha'achat ahuva v'ha'achat snu'a? And then the Torah goes on to address not the emotional bond between the husband and his wife who he hates, but the status of the child. V'ya b'yom anchilot banav et asher yelo lo yuchal levaker et ben ha'uva upnei ben ha'snua b'chor. The b'chor belongs to the snua as it would happen to be, whereas the son of the beloved is not the b'chor. So you can't take the birthright of the double portion and shift it from the son of the hated one to the son of the loved one. Loved and hate doesn't mean loved and hated in an emotional context in that paragraph. It means primary and secondary choice, like an Ishana Pilagesh, or a choice of primary wife and secondary wife. Think Yaakov and Leah. Right? Rachel and Leah. Rachel was the one he loved. So it describes his relationship with Leah as he hated her. But it doesn't mean that he hated her. It just means that there's a, the word ahava in that context is a choice, is primary designation. So it's not always clear that the word ahav is used as an emotional context. It sometimes is, and sort of need to sort out those moments. But sometimes it's also just a function of being enamored with, being taken by, being seeing somebody as value. Positive relationship versus a negative relationship. By the way, it's described Shaul as having loved David also. Where did it describe Shaul as loving David?
When he came to play the harp.
Right, the very first time he came to play the harp for him, which was back in Perek Tetzayin. Tetzayin. Perek Tetzayin, Pasuk Vav Aleph. Vayavod David al Shaul v'yamod lefanav v'yehaveyu me'od v'yilu nosei kelim. Shaul loved him. And at the end of this perek, it's going to describe Shaul as seeing David as an oyev. Not such a far distance between ohev and oyev. Another one of those plays on words. Lashon lefela lashon.
Should David have been at all fearful having to go out all these times to kill the Plishtim? I mean, you don't hear anything. I mean, should he have feared himself? You know, he's got to bring back 100 here, 200 there. I mean, you don't hear anything from his side.
True, but you also don't in generally, well
I
would say two things. In general, you don't see, number two, in general, you don't hear, the Navi doesn't typically tell us people's emotional thoughts. Right? Shaul is an exception. And this Perek is an exception. Typically, you don't hear,
you
don't hear their emotions. You have it from time to time. Yaakov, when he's about to face Esav, it says that he was afraid, etc. But you don't usually, Navi doesn't spend a lot of time on that. But on the other hand, if you want to understand David's emotional world view, then you just have to read Tehillim. Because it's all there. David spills out his guts in Tehillim. But that's in Ketuvim. And Ketuvim is very different than Navi. So you have that, but you have it more in Tehillim than you do in the chronicles of the Nevi'im in Shmuel. Well, let me just finish this train of thought for a moment. The third reference to how Shaul feels about David is at the end of the parak. So you have it at the beginning, you have it in the middle, and then you have it at the end in Psukim Chavchet and Chavtet. Vayar Shaul vayeda ki Hashem im David v'umichal Shaul ehevatu. Shaul saw that David, God was with David, and Michal loved him. Vayosef Shaul leirom ipnei David od vayhi Shaul oyevet David kol yamim. And there's the really powerful phrase. On the one hand, Michal loves him, Yonatan loves him, the people love him. Three times the word ava appears in this parak in the context of others. Yonatan loves him, the people loved him. Yehuda and Yisrael oyevet David. Michal loves him. Michal bachul ahevatu. Shaul, who started in Perek Tetzayin as Vayaveu loving David, ends the Perek as Vayosef Shaul leirom ipnei David od vayhi Shaul oyev et David. The powerful play on the words and the emotions. Three different groups of people are described in this Perek as engaging with David in a positive way until the point of describing them as loving David, Yonatan, Yudah, Yisrael, and Michal. And Shaul's trajectory has taken him from Ahava to Oyev, from Vayaveu to Oyev. All right. Before we conclude, I want to come back to the second possibility of Tehillah L'Mokesh. It's another thought going through Shaul's mind. one level, which I think is certainly pshat, he's going to hand him over to the plishtim and let the plishtim kill him. But David has escaped the hands of the plishtim many times. So what makes Shaul so confident that David is going to escape the hands of the plishtim again?
As you said, he already had decided that God was behind him.
So that's his conclusion. That conclusion is right. But as he's going through this process, even if he comes to that conclusion, he still wants to kill him. He wants to let the plishtim kill him. So what makes him at this point, when he offers Michal and he says, "Utihibo yad plishtim," let the plishtim kill him, right? What is v'tihilo l'mokesh? Let her be a stumbling block for him. So we said that it was the opportunity again to offer him to the plishtim. Maybe there's another plan going through his mind, which is that if the plishtim won't take him down,
his wife's going
to, maybe Michal will.
How?
Oh. And this is so interesting in Shaul's worldview. Shaul sees Michal as loyal to him.
And not him to her.
Correct. And you see that play out in Perek Yetet.
How does he already know that?
Well, I'm assuming, based on how he plays it out in Perek Yetet, I'm assuming he knows that, because Perek Yetet is right away. And she's the younger. Something about being the younger may be playing in his mind as well. But take a look at Perek Yetet. He uses Michal to get to David.
Where is that in the
text? Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're going to Perek Yud Tet Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're just going to read the next story briefly, and then with that we will conclude today. And we'll pick this up from next week. Vayishlach Shaul Malachim Obeit David L'Shomro L'Amito B'Boker. After David's second escape by the sword, and David runs away from the palace, Shaul sends messengers to the house, to David's house, to guard the house and to kill him in the morning. So what happens? V'tagid David Michal ishto lemor imincha mimalet et nafshecha laila machar atamumat. She knows the plan. She knows that Shaul is going to kill him. Right. How does she know? Doesn't tell us. Either she's got good intelligence infrastructure, or maybe. Right. Or maybe Shaul told her. Right. Shaul sent messengers to the house to kill David. So she knows the house is surrounded, the house has got guards. Vatored Michal et David ba'ad ha'chalon. So she lets him out the window, meaning she knows exactly where the guards are stationed. She knows the guards are stationed outside, so she lets David out the window. Vayelech vayivrach vayimalait. And that's how David escapes. So he helps him escape. Not only that, she knows the guards are going to come into the house. V'tikach Michal et ha'trafim, v'tasem al ha'mita. She takes these trafim, these statues, idol statues. We'll come back to the trafim. I know it's going through your mind. It sounds familiar. V'tasem al ha'mita. She puts them in the bed. V'et kvir ha'izim sama mirashotav. Some kind of goat's head and a garment the innards, if you will, right, of the animal to make it smell. That the chaspi babaged, and she covered it with a sheet. So the messengers came to Michal and said, "Okay, where is David?" Now, again, what was going through Shaul's mind if he sends messengers to the house and says, "Okay, knock on the door and say, Michal, hand us David," knowing that we're going to kill him, unless you assume that Michal is going to side with Shaul. Vatomer, her response is, "Cholo, he's sick." Vayishlach Shaul et ha'malachim lirot et David lemor. So Shaul sends messengers back and says, "Get him out of bed. Ha'alu oto b'mita elai, l'amito. Bring him in his bed." Vayavo ha'malachim, v'nei ha'trafim al ha'mita, u'kfir ha'azim mirashotav. Shaul wasn't prepared to say, except that he's sick. Shaul says, "Okay, bring him in his bed so I can kill him." So they took the whole bed, and they found that in the bed was, instead of David, was Trafim covered with... So at that point, what did the Shaul realize?
He got tricked.
That Michal saved David's life. Right. So he confronts her. Vayomer Shaul Michal, Lama kacha rimitini? Why did you trick me? Why did you deceive me? Vatishalchi et oivi vayimalet, and you let my enemy escape. Meaning, what's Shaul's assumption?
That
she would side with Shaul. Knowing that David is Shaul's enemy, that she would side with Shaul, so Shaul confronts her. How did you let my enemy escape? What kind of a loyal spy are you? Vatila Lamokesh, I let you marry him so that you could be a stumbling block for him. Vatoma Michal Shaul, who emar elai Shalchini. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He asked me to let him go. So I let him go. Meaning, she doesn't tell him. Her relationship is complex, and we'll talk about Michal at length over the course of Sefer Shmuel. But you see already what's going through Shaul's mind is the assumption that he can use Michal to trap David again, Delilah style, if you will, if David manages to escape the Plishtim. And maybe, we don't know for sure, but now we're from the pshat into the world of conjecture, maybe that is also going through Shaul's mind when he says, Vayishar hadavar be'inav vayomer tihilu lemokesh.
But he knew that Michal loved him.
But again, there's a difference between loving him and she's still Michal Bat Shaul. And the proof is that in the end, when David and Michal's relationship does fall apart, at the end of the story in Shmuel Bet Perek Zion, which we read as Haftarah a couple weeks ago, and David criticizes her and says that she never has a child and she essentially loses her status as his primary wife, there it says, U'michal Bat Shaul. Looking out the window, Michal Bat Shaul says to David, whatever she says about his dancing, and he's going to, she's still Bat Shaul. It's a very complex relationship. The relationship between David and Michal is the most complex relationship in all of Tanakh. So next week,
he's loyal to her father.
And from his perspective, he was expecting her loyalty to be to him. And I think in the biblical arena, that's not an uncommon phenomenon. Look at Yaakov and Lavan and Rachel and Leah. Well, I think Lavan certainly expected Rachel and Leah to be loyal to him and not to Yaakov. So we will explore this relationship, the parallel to Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, and all of the other pieces, Bezrat Hashem, in part 2 of David and Michal, which will be next week.